Thank you, Mr. Needham. The inquiry team's been gathering information in four ways: through firstly consultation, secondly through a submissions process. We've received 41 submissions. Thirdly, through a very extensive literature review. We've been looking at a huge number of relevant reports, and some of that information should come out during the course of the day. We've also requested and recently received crime data from the police service so that we can consider actual levels of crime in the communities as well. I'll talk a bit more about the consultation. The inquiry team has conducted around 150 meetings throughout Queensland, the majority of those in the Indigenous communities, with the community members across all the communities that are under our terms of reference. We've met with councillors, CEOs, mayors and councillors, community justice groups, some of the men's groups and some of the women's groups, and we've also tried to hold a public meeting in every community that we've visited. We visited all 17 of the Aboriginal Shire communities, some of them more than once. In the Torres Strait, we visited Thursday Island, Horn Island, Bardu Island, and also Bamaga and Sisia in the Northern Peninsula. At Thursday Island, we met with all the mayors at the Island Coordinating Council, so that was one way of making sure we were able to cover the Torres Strait. We also met with the representatives of the justice groups from the Outer Islands and also the Thursday Island Justice Group, and also we attended the annual conference of the community police on Thursday Island. With police, we met with police on the ground in all the communities that we visited. We've also met with the senior police in the regional areas and in Brisbane, including staff of the Cultural Advisory Unit. We met with a range of other people as well, staff of the Department of Communities, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, and a range of representatives of other government and non-government agencies. I'll just say some things generally about our consultation. I'd like to say first up that the inquiry team was very impressed by the willingness of police officers to discuss the issues openly and productively. There's been great cooperation from the police. The same's true for community members. Despite the huge demands that government workers put on communities to consult, and probably the justifiable position that community members could have adopted, that we've said it all to you before, people invested their time, energy and hope in engaging with the inquiry process, and we're very appreciative of that. Unfortunately, some of the criticisms of that you hear of fly-in, fly-out consultation do apply to us. However, we attempted to make sure that as many people as possible knew that we were coming and what we were coming for, and we tried to stay at least a couple of days in every one of the communities. We tried to consult broadly with a cross-section of the community members, including those most often at the front line of interaction with police. However, I have to say we're probably less successful in that regard. Despite those shortcomings, we managed to talk to a very large number of people. They comprised a fair cross-section of community representatives. And whilst views were by no means uniform across everybody, clear and consistent themes did come out of it. And often these themes emerged across police and community. There's a lot of similarity. I'd like to comment from the outset today that the inquiry team found a considerable level of goodwill in both directions. Despite the issues that were raised, communities want their police, they recognise the work that they do, they're hopeful that aspects of services can improve, but they definitely do not want things to go backwards. The police, for their part, seem to have a strong service ethic, they want to help the community. They recognise that most people in the community are law-abiding. We thought that goodwill was genuine.
Boy, thanks, Mark. If we can look then at the resource challenges confronting the QPS in these communities, Mark, if you can tell us some of the key things that have been highlighted about how police are operating in the communities, and focus firstly on these resource issues.
I'll start with some clear positives. Police have a presence in or near most of the communities. The clear exception there is the Outer Islands of the Torres Strait, which don't have a permanent police presence. In contrast, many other government agencies don't have a permanent on-the-ground presence in communities, and that's something that does impact on policing. Over time, too, there's clearly been an improvement in the level of police resources provided to the communities. For example, there's two new police stations, one at Hopevale and one at Woodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawoodjawood and we're seeing an increase in the number of police being allocated to the communities. Again, we've got to remember that the exception is the Outer Islands, the Torres Strait, but the state government has recently announced that they're going to be providing the police with an aeroplane to be based at Horn Island to improve the service delivery there.